Welcome to Overtures. This was my last episode before Thanksgiving and before heading out on contract, so stay tuned to our Instagram for possible content and episodes while I'm gone. I had a lot of fun on this episode with my guest, and I think you will too. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Hello everyone, happy Friday. I hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a good day. Excuse the way the light is coming in on my face today. I closed the curtains, but I'm still getting this fun stripey effect, so don't mind that. Hopefully that's not too much of a visual issue to deal with when watching, but just wanted to quick apologize for that. But anyway, I hope you're having a good day. Happy Friday. So a few housekeeping things before we get started. So first, I have two things coming up, a bit of a shameless self-promotion here. A week from today, which is crazy to say, will be the Songs of Rankin and Bass produced by Rainbow Suns Productions at 54 Below at 9:30. I'm very excited. We had a rehearsal this past week. So much fun, such talented people, but also such just like fun, feel good, goofy music. So I hope you come out and join us. I'll be putting the link for that down below after this is all done, but also I will put the code RankinBass5 down below. You can use that for $5 off. And then also the day after the 54 Below concert, I will be leaving for my contract at Millbrook Playhouse in central Pennsylvania. So if you're in the area, come out to see the best Christmas pageant ever musical. It's going to be a blast. It'll also change how I'm doing overtures for a few weeks. So I'll get back to you on how that's going, but stay tuned to the Instagram and I will give more information as to how we're going to go about future episodes in the coming month or so. With all that, we will go ahead and get started. Welcome to episode 53 of Overtures. My guest today is an alum of Wagner College, class of 2021, with a degree in theater performance. Currently, he is navigating the world of acting on TV and film, working on student films, and as a background actor on some of your favorite shows. We weren't all that close in college, didn't see each other all that much, but we ran into each other recently, leading to this episode today. He's very funny, very hardworking, and very talented. So without further ado, this is Zach Sloan.
Hi, Laura. Hi, everybody. Hey. Thanks so much for that introduction. That was so nice.
Of course. No problem. No problem at all. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. And I know we were chatting earlier. You're Zooming in today, but we're not using Zoom. You're streaming in today from Long Island. How is it out there today?
Good. You know, stuck in the suburbs, living at home, trying to save some money before making the move to the Big Apple.
Absolutely. And that's a smart decision too. And with also being as close as you are on Long Island, like if someone's like doing something, you can go out and see them or like grab lunch and things like that. So at least you're not too far away.
Yeah, I'm super fortunate. I'm definitely closer to Queens, only a 35-minute train ride from Penn Station. So yeah, easy to get around from there.
Amazing. So I always provide that context of how I know my guests. We know each other from Wagner. We went to school together. I'm trying to think, did we ever like have a dance class together? Because I know we didn't really have any other regular classes together.
I want to say the only thing I could think of is maybe a jazz class together.
Yeah, I think vaguely maybe a jazz class. Yeah. Or like, did you take ballet?
Yeah, I didn't get very far, probably about as far as ballet too.
No, I think we might have had a ballet class together. Okay. I'm not sure.
I can see the aerobic studio for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm like, I don't think we had any classes together, mm-hmm. but... That's okay. Yeah. And I know the only thing that we did work on together, though, that comes to mind was a student-run production of 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. I was a stagehand on that crazy fun show, but you played Chip Tolentino.
Yeah, that was my freshman year, first show at Wagner at all. Didn't really know Spelling Bee that much beforehand, to be quite honest with you. But it was a lot of fun. It was such a good experience.
Yeah, and then to be like, okay, here's Chip Tolentino. You get to sing My Unfortunate Erection. You're like, cool, great, love this show.
Yeah, this is the first thing my family is seeing me do outside of high school. Definitely, exactly. This is definitely college.
Yeah, a big swing in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And then we recently reunited on the set of Girls on the Bus. We were both working background that day and ran into each other completely unplanned. That was just so funny because I remember walking in, like signing in, and I look over and I'm like, Zach? Hello?
Well, because we were filming on Long Island that day. So I drove over. We were filming near the Nassau Coliseum, like concert venue at a hotel across the street. And so I got there early. And I think the bus coming in from the city was late.
It came in late. Yeah.
So I was, you know, sitting there putzing around waiting for wardrobe and everybody to get there. And I probably hit up Crafty for breakfast. And then I see the mob of bus people coming in and I'm just watching. It's like, wait a minute. That's Cora. Like, what are the odds?
Yeah. Like, what are the odds? Yeah, literally.
No, that was awesome that we got to spend that long, pretty long day together.
That was a long day, but I was very happy about that because like there were some great people on that set that day, but I'm like, oh, okay, there's someone who like, I know them, they know me. Cause sometimes meeting people on set can go hit or miss. Anyone who's worked background before can vouch to this. And we'll talk more about our experiences later, but I was very happy to have someone that I knew beforehand on that set that day. Cause I was just like, oh, okay. And like everything just feels a lot more calm that day.
Yeah, settle in a little bit.
Exactly. And that'll be cool because what we saw them film, we'll be both pretty featured in that episode.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it said, well, because you were thrown in last minute. We were surprised. I was booked as a fan of a TikTok celebrity. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that meant getting there. But then one of the other fans was a no-show and they wanted somebody else to fill in the little group because
and
they
I was
were
sitting
gonna
next
be
to you and holding
featured. And I don't think you hadn't been used all day, right? Because they were just pulling in like three people at a time.
Yep.
And so you were a face that could be featured on camera without any overlap. And so they brought you.
Yeah. And they're like, you're one of you're, they're like, looked at you and they're like, you're one of the fans. Here, you go ahead, come with us. And I was like, okay, cool. But it seems to be like the first episode of the entire series. Cause they were talking about like introducing all the characters. So that'll be fun for us to run up to this character. I think Lola was the name. I looked up the actress. The actress's name was Natasha Benham. And we were asking her for a selfie. She was so nice.
She was so cool.
She sat down and like actually chatted with us in between takes. And so that was cool and fun. And hopefully we'll get to see it soon enough.
I know.
They just started.
I think it's HBO or Showtime or like a streaming, something like that. So it's probably going to be a minute. Yeah, they just started. And so that's the first episode. I think Natasha said they were given 6 months to get the season done. So
gotcha. Well,
definitely we'll at least 6 months.
At least 6 months, and then they have editing to do. Yeah. So who knows? But we'll keep an eye out, and you know, maybe we'll be right on camera there. But
yeah, we'll see.
That was a real. I will say that was before we continue on with the interview. I was so excited for that one actor who was with us because this is something that doesn't always happen on set. Mm-hmm. One of them got a line right on set that day, and that's like immediate eligibility for the union with the Taft-Hartley loophole. So that was really exciting because I had never seen that happen on set before.
I know, me neither. And I didn't realize that came with a massive pay bump for that actor to then use towards the union initiation fee that they now are kind of forced into signing up for, but you get a nice little head start.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really cool. It was also funny because I remember them like looking at the four of us and like talking and we're like, okay, one of us is about to get a line and we can't do anything except stand here. It felt very chorus line in a sense to just be like them staring at us. And you're like, what can I do other than just like smile and like pretend to act normal?
And they totally made up the line. It wasn't in the script. Yeah. They were just like, here's 8 words for you to say, like, can I get a selfie?
Which is fair because like when you have all these actors running up to this actress, it's kind of weird for none of them to be saying anything. So like understandable, but yeah, craziness. But that was a fun day. And we'll talk about more set experiences later on. But going from the beginning of things for you, how did you first get started in theater?
So I got started, I would say, later than most people I know. It wasn't until high school that I started doing shows. My high school was grades 8 through 12. Okay. So it wasn't until, I mean, I did a couple things in like middle school that were just kind of like in the classroom shows. But I was in private school for a couple of years, went back to public school, and they had a really nice theater program. Mm-hmm. So I got involved in those shows, and I didn't know I wanted to pursue it in college until the summer between my junior and senior year.
There was someone
a year older than me who was doing it for college. I think he ended up going to Montclair. And then I was like, wait, maybe I want to do this. I thought I was going to be a biomedical engineer and was going to go to Northeastern University.
Oh my God.
That was like the plan.
Big difference.
Yeah, very much so. So I had a friend of mine who was going to a summer program at Syracuse. It was like a 3-week intensive. And so I auditioned and I got in. And my grandparents were like, yeah, this is a totally great idea. We'll pay for you to go, have the best time. They were thinking that I was going to go have fun, but realize it wasn't for me.
And then come back and be like, yep, I'm doing that biomedical engineering.
Right. And so I see them at the final performance. I'm texting them like, "This, I've never taken a dance class before in my life. I'm like, I can't do this. I don't know what's going on. I don't know any of this. And then they see our little showcase at the end and I find them in the lobby afterwards. And I'm like, I want to do this. I want to go to college for this. And they probably, I mean, I don't remember it now, but their faces probably dropped. Like, put a poker face up and they're like, okay, sure, we'll figure this out. Sure. So then I had to, you know, jump into the whole college audition process and pre-screens and getting headshots for the first time. So that's how I got into pursuing this, you know, entertainment world.
Yeah.
After high school.
I'm curious, was that like your overture moment, like doing that program, realizing like, oh, I actually do want to do this as a career? Was it just like working on that program as a whole, or was there something like when you were there that like shifted something in you?
I think probably as a whole, because it was also not just a preview of what musical theater could be, but also a preview of what college would be. We were living in the Syracuse dorms. We were commuting to classes at their Syracuse stage complex. We were eating in the dining hall. I had a roommate that, you know, I didn't really talk to that much. We didn't see much of each other. We were one of two guys I was one of two guys in the program, and his mom worked for Syracuse. So for him, it was just like summer camp. And I was like trying it on as like, this could be what I spend the rest of my life doing. And so we were just kind of on very different paths at that program, but it totally locked in for me that this is what I could see, at least see the next 4 years of my life.
Yeah. Being. Like seeing it while you were at school, you're like, I could see my college career being like this. No, I totally get that. Cause having done like a summer camp at a college, that experience of like being in the dorms, going together to the dining hall to eat before you go to like your classes at summer camp, like that really does give you a taste of like, oh, this is what like college and those kinds of things can be like. And it's really eye-opening and really special. And I know I have very fond moments of that program for myself as well. So before we get going on your the acting side of things and all this other stuff, you have a huge passion for music, and not just musical theater, but music as a whole. And you were telling me about at the Backstory Music on Instagram, which is also an account on Spotify. This is a passion project of yours. Do you want to talk a little bit about what it is and how it got started?
Yeah, sure. It's totally just a, you know, fan-driven hobby of mine. Yeah. It started actually during, I don't remember specifically, but I remember seeing a lot of articles and press during the Black Lives Matter movement that was kind of at its height during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I remember this one Rolling Stone article that was comparing Megan Thee Stallion's song, Hot Girl Summer, and there was a Black Bear song that had come out just after that called Hot Girl Bummer. And so that came out after hers, and his song was getting played all over the place, like mainstream radio, featured everywhere. And it was talking about how hip hop and R&B acts like Megan Thee Stallion kind of have to work their way to earn a spot on mainstream media.
Which is so frustrating.
It was super frustrating. And I was listening to a lot of the music that wasn't getting that mainstream focus. I was kind of finding it on my own. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up seeing on Instagram this one account. I actually just looked it up before this live stream. And I have it saved into my highlights on my personal Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so I think the account was Caleb with like a bunch of repetitive letters spelling out that name, but it was a bunch of posts. And the first one was like, if you like these artists, and it was like Ariana Grande, Billie Eilish, Bruno Mars, JoJo, listing a whole bunch of people. And then it was like, these are the musicians that occupy the same space as them, but are kind of on the fringe just because what the music machine and media has done for them unfairly. And so I was like, holy crap. Like, there's a lot of music that I listen to in both camps, but my overlap with my friends and people around me is only really in the Ariana mainstream. Grande, Billie Eilish camp. So yeah. I then wanted to create playlists that kind of introduce people to the artists that I listen to that maybe the mainstream isn't highlighting by showing what that artist listens to. So one of the first couple of playlists I did was for Ari Lennox. She's an R&B artist from the DMV area. She just dropped her second album and is going on tour. She's super, super cool. And I was like, nobody around, again, like, this is all happening while we're in theater school. Like, nobody is really like talking about this kind of stuff. So I was like, let me see what I like out of Ari Lennox. And then let me see through interviews and stuff that she's done, what she listens to in her spare time that kind of explains why her music sounds the way it does. So instead of going from like, if you like Ariana Grande, you would like Ari Lennox. I kind of went vertical back in time.
Gotcha.
And that was just on my personal Instagram account. And then I kind of wanted to give it a life of its own. So I created a separate page for it. I cover a whole bunch of artists, mainstream, independent, you know, crazy followings, maybe a couple thousand monthly listeners on Spotify. And I just want to share as much music with as many people as possible. And I put in my bio on the Backstory Music, I want to help to change your Spotify algorithm. I want to be the person that you go to where if you like this person, you would like this other person.
Yeah, because no, honestly,
like Spotify isn't doing the best job at that.
Oh, 100%. Frankly. I'm getting in kind of this loop that I'm like, I don't want to listen to this anymore. Like, how do I get out of this loop? How do I get out of this algorithm? So like, honestly, I have to go to work later. I will be pulling up those playlists like on the way there and being like, okay, what can I listen to now? Which is so exciting. And I'm so excited to take a closer look at it. And so you're a huge lover of music and a lot of music that perhaps those of our generation don't know, or even just like current music that is not on the mainstream, like you were talking about. Has this something that has developed with you over time, or have you always had a love of music and older music and maybe music that's not in the mainstream?
I've definitely had a love for music, and it started, I think, my parents, especially my mom, just like played a lot of music, and like the car was a place where it was like before I could control the radio, like it was her music. So I was then learning the words to the songs that she knew the words to. So it was a lot of, you know, 70s and 80s classic rock, Billy Joel, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, Pat Benatar, stuff like that. And then I grew up in the, and I mean, you did too, in like the iTunes iPod age. So that was like, I don't know. I think I always say like 2008 was like the big year for like the pop music that was being pushed out into radio. Like Beyonce was getting super big. It was Katy Perry. American Idol was in like its heyday, stuff like that. And so that's what I was then wanting to hear played in the car. And then as streaming goes on and people are able to break away from the industry and labels and create a name for themselves, social media and streaming have helped that. And so I'm also like a spreadsheet junkie. Like I love doing the research and like comparing and diving into all that. So that was another reason that my music and my love for spreadsheets kind of merged, and I could like get into the nitty gritty of research and discover new artists and track releases and stuff like that, and then hope to share it with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to share my screen of the Spotify page just so people can see it. But I also wanted to ask, you have all these amazing playlists that you've put together, and how long does it take you to compile these?
So it really depends. So the first playlist up there, Through the Fire, that was my fall playlist for the year. I didn't know where it was going to go. And then I was looking at what I was listening to a lot lately. And it was a lot of this Quiet Storm, which is a subgenre of R&B. It was like the 70s, 80s, and 90s, like late night jams.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of, I wanted to know more about that. And so the first half of the playlist is like true to that genre with like the Natalie Cole, Marvin Gaye, Roberta Flack. And then as the playlist goes down, I tried to find more recent releases that maybe fit into that genre, which has more of like my comfort zone and maybe some other people's comfort zone.
These are some long playlists too, which is incredible.
So this was just a lot of fun. I was just finding Quiet Storm lists and like picking and choosing from what I liked and was listening to. If you go to one that's for a specific artist, the first one, that Sam Creighton one, that's actually kind of an outlier because I created a Google form that I can like send to artists if they want to work with me. And this is actually the first playlist that somebody worked with me on that filled out the form. So this is straight from Sam Creighton herself. She's an independent artist. I saw her on, there was a Netflix a cappella documentary when I was in like high school in like an a cappella group.
That's so cool.
And so she graduated from Northeastern, broke away from that and is doing music on her own. And it's super cool. It's super pop. Like if you love the, if you're reminiscent of like the 2010s pop or like some of the Carly Rae Jepsen kind of stuff, yeah. Definitely go to that. But then like the Taylor Swift.
And yeah, the Midnight's kind of, one. Yeah.
So this is where I'd say most of my playlists kind of start is now that the backstory's kind of grown and I've set up a large number of playlists, I like to coordinate them around an artist's release. So as Midnight's was coming about, I was starting to research the Taylor Swift playlist. And Taylor Swift doesn't know who I am. I didn't even send her the Google form because I knew she wouldn't fill it out. So these are all from interviews that she has done. So everything is from a direct quote from some point in her life. You know, I don't go to the reviews where some music critic is like, this sounds a lot like that one instrument featured in that one song from that, right. You know, 1991 album. This is like Taylor Swift was like, I listen to James Taylor, so a James Taylor song is going on the playlist.
That's smart.
And so that's how a lot of these playlists come to be. I'd say it maybe takes, depending on how, you know, the larger the artist, the more interviews they do and the greater chance there is something that I can use for a playlist. So maybe a couple hours, like 2 hours from going to just like scouring the internet to narrowing it down, putting it in a spreadsheet and then making it a playlist.
Yeah. That's awesome. And that's so, so freaking cool. And so I'm curious, what music do you currently have on repeat for yourself? Is there a particular song, album, artist?
Right now, it's probably this singer. Her name is Rosie. If any of my friends in my life, I talk about her all the time. I just saw her at a concert a couple nights ago in Brooklyn because she is releasing the deluxe edition of her album, Berry. She is kind of, she's from San Francisco. She was signed to Adam Levine in like the mid 2010s. He created a label just for her. And then she's like, you're not letting me make the music I want to make. I've got to step away from this. And so she's kind of finding her path. She's now with another label making the kind of music that she says she was destined to make. And so it's pop, but there's a bit of like a rock influence because she listens to Fleetwood Mac and Alanis Morissette, but she also listens to Aretha Franklin and Amy Winehouse. And so that's the kind of music where she has some catchy, you know, upbeat pop numbers, but then there's also some songs with real emotion behind it, which I really enjoy. So that's something I definitely say check out Rosie's Berry album. And also just in general, I love JoJo from the early 2000s.
Yeah.
She is fully back. She's fully making
music. She's
released
a whole bunch of new music. Yeah.
For sure. Check out JoJo and everybody. JoJo has a playlist too. Check out the JoJo backstory playlist.
I love it. That's amazing. I'm so excited to go check all this out later on. But going back to Wagner, which I mean, I guess we kind of were talking about Wagner because you started backstory music while you were there. But I'm trying to think. You were a sophomore when I graduated. Mm-hmm. So what all shows did you get to work on in your junior and senior year? Obviously, the pandemic plays a huge part in this and affected a lot of that time in your college career. But just curious.
So when pandemic happened, that was junior year. spring semester of junior year, it was closing weekend of Sister Act, which I was lucky enough to be a part of in the ensemble on the main stage. So we ended
it was right before shutdown.
I think we did our second weekend and then that Wednesday after it was like, grab your things and go home. Which was wild. And I had auditioned for CSP's production of American Idiot, I picked up my libretto a couple of days before already, like making notes. And then I had to erase my notes and drop it off in Towers.
God.
And then, yeah, we were at home for the rest of that semester. And then senior year came around. I was living in a house off campus with a bunch of friends just because we didn't know what dorms would be like with COVID and everything. So we kind of had like a 5-person bubble. And I did a Zoom show through CSP called Litmus Test.
Yes, I saw that.
Nina Zaffaro. That was a lot of fun. You know,
it was a good one.
It was very similar to this, like sitting at my dining room table, like just doing a show.
Doing a show.
And then I was in Urinetown, which was on the main stage and directed by Michelle Pock. And she wanted to film it like a movie, not just like a show on stage. We were fully masked and she wanted it to look as much as possible like it was one shot.
Right.
So that was kind of a crazy scenario. And we had Showcase. We filmed Showcase in, you know, our partners in stage one. And we were also, I guess, kind of gifted, I would say, maybe like a consolation. Like we did a concert on the outdoor stage in that first semester, just to kind of get us back into
what it's like performing to perform for people.
That's,
I mean, it's amazing that you guys got to work on as many projects as you did during that time as well, which is really special. I wanted to especially talk about Urinetown because I have had Kirsten on the show, who of course played Hope in Urinetown. Mm-hmm. So it was so fun to hear her experience with it, but I'd love to hear about your experience with it because you're dealing with working on a show pre-vaccine, but also what it was like to rehearse and record this very fourth wall breaking stage production and putting it into a filmed medium.
Yeah, I was Senator Phipp in that show. So I was, you know, I'll say like an accessory character to the plot. So I wasn't as much involved in the, like the group numbers of the poor people, you know, getting involved and using whatever means they had to use the restroom. But there were a lot of moments where it was just, like I remember a rehearsal where I don't even think we were filming yet. It was just Cameron Russell was filming this for us. And so he was standing just as if he had a camera in his hand and I was gonna enter into the shot. And I was entering from the wings. Right. And Michelle was like, no, you can stand 2 feet out of frame and walk into it as if you've walked into the room. And that was like a, because you're on the stage, you know, it's always
you guys filmed it on the stage. That's
right.
Also
and we're using, we're using rafters and railings and like we're covering the backstage while we're filming this too. So it's like use, and you're always taught to, you know, take up the space and use it as creatively as possible within your blocking. And so just to be like, no, it's still small. Like we really had to take this massive show. And we did, I don't think it showed in the final production, but I think mentally we all had to get into a space of shrinking down this massive beast of a show to be on camera, but also carry the weight that it does when it's normally on stage. So that was a whole learning experience in and of itself.
100%. And I want to say you guys did a very successful job at it. I got to watch it and out in my graduate housing, like being like, okay, let me see what Wagner's doing right now. You guys did an amazing job with it.
Thank you.
And I'm also curious, was there anything that you learned working on that that ended up helping you in learning more on camera stuff later on as you started pursuing like TV and film?
Or was it
very different?
I don't know if it was something that I was really that conscious of. I don't think doing that show was like a marker of like, I love the camera. I want to work with the camera forever. I think it was kind of a, it was a tool that we used to get out of an unfortunate circumstance to make the best of what we were given. And then graduating from college and then seeing, this camera tool was like a Wagner exclusive. Like nobody right. else is really adapting with this way because they are regional theaters that won't be able to survive by right. filming their show in this way. So I was kind of at a crossroads of, do I want to go head on through the pandemic doing regional shows, or do I want to find something that gives me that same love of performing in another capacity?
Right.
And honestly, what it came down to was seeing how SAG-AFTRA had locked down their COVID requirements.
Yeah. They that locked really... it down quick because they had to. There's so many people who work on a set that it's impossible to not, you know?
Mm-hmm. So that was seeing that, like, I was going to get a COVID test this day, know that I was negative, and work in 2 days with everybody else who knew that they were negative. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, it was, your mask is in your back pocket. As soon as they say cut, it is coming right back on your face while you're all on set and about to go into another take. So that made me feel a lot more comfortable with performing with everything that was going on. And I don't know, I guess I caught another bug for it, for another area of performing.
A TV and film bug, as well as getting to work with theater and things like that. And I know one thing we like chatted briefly about when we were on set together was how many people that we had graduated with that seemed to have found either like quote unquote left the business, which is, I feel like, sometimes a silly phrase, or someone who's found, people who have found other passions and have started to pursue those as well. And I thought that conversation was so fascinating. And I think it's interesting talking about this because yes, you're still doing, you love theater and you do theater, but also you're found like, oh, TV and film might also be a route for me. And some people, like, theirs is like out of performance, but I think it's just so interesting how the pandemic sped up that process for so many of us.
Yeah, it was definitely like throwing you into the fire of it with, like, there was just so much added pressure, which I think was completely, like, looking back, unnecessary and just not valid, because the industry was doing what it had to do to survive. Yeah. So, and we're still coming out of it where productions are banking on, for lack of a better word, star power to get butts in seats, whether that be Broadway or movies. They're not as willing to take a chance on somebody who just graduated.
Yeah.
And that was going, you know, everywhere across the country. Theaters were also rightfully honoring contracts that had ended in 2020 that they were going to renew for 2021. And so, background, anybody can just sign up for these services and walk in off the street and do it. Like, you don't.
Yeah.
When I, on my first show, the person who I ended up spending most of my day with was in med school, had a couple days off, and was like, this sounds fun.
Yeah.
Like, that is as easy and as much as it is for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, it's also funny because I know I use Central Casting. You also use Central Casting,
I use
correct?
Two. I started out using Grant Wilfley. They will also post on other websites. Sometimes they post on Backstage. Sometimes they'll post on casting networks. And that they have their own website where it's really on you to be the motivator of your work, to scroll and say, I fit this type, I'm available these days. And then Grant Wilfley will take that information and say, oh, you're available, we like you enough to offer you that spot.
Yeah.
Whereas with Central Casting,
they send you.
They send you, but the whole sign up process, you have to like sit at your computer and wait to get a slot, almost like you're buying concert tickets. Not as crazy as Taylor Swift. concert tickets. But then you go and it's like a doctor's office. You sit in a lobby and fill out like
so much
20
paperwork.
Pages of paperwork. They take your photo. Then like you're at the DMV and you go home and you upload your own stuff.
And then you're like, okay, time to get
jobs.
Then
they use their database to fill the job. So they will say to you, we like you already. Are you available?
Yeah.
And I have found that I'm getting more work with Central Casting than with Grant Wilfley. Grant Wilfley, you work a little bit more closely with the casting people. Because right. once you sign up for the job, you're in communication with a specific person. They get like a fake work phone number and will text you.
Yeah.
And so I worked on a show called Three Women, which is supposed to come out, I think, next month on Showtime.
Some point.
And they needed somebody local. They were filming on Long Island and they needed somebody local with a car that they could use as a picture car. And I was available. I told them make and model of the car. They said, great, we'll have you. And that was actually my first SAG voucher, which is something we can talk about a little bit
later.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then, so I was in with that production. And then a couple days later, I get a text from the number that gave me the car job and said, do you know how to ice skate? That's like the text I get. Like, hey, this is Grant Wolfley with Three Women. Do you know how to ice skate? I said, yes.
Yes.
And they said, can you get a COVID test by 6 o'clock tonight and get yourself to Staten Island tomorrow to ice skate? And I said, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can. So I did. And then a couple days later, they were back on Long Island and said, can you get to this movie theater to pretend like you're watching Twilight? And I said, yes.
That's amazing. I love that they followed up with you too. And we're like, yeah, we'll just keep plugging him in. And yeah. It's so interesting because people I've talked to, like most recently when I was on set for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, central casting is also is apparently very difficult to get an appointment for now, because now that things have opened up a little bit more, trying to be one of those like 20 people when they do the onboarding I think every other week or something like that. I don't remember their schedule, but like apparently it has become very difficult to grab one of those spots.
Oh, no way.
And so I found that also very fascinating of like, good thing I snuck in there, like right as I always hate to say the pandemic is quote unquote ending because we're still in it. But like that timing of when things were opening back up, it was much easier to get in. So I just found that fascinating. But I'm curious, did you ever take acting for the camera while you were at Wagner, or was working on Urinetown like your first like introduction to like working with a camera?
So I signed up for the acting for the camera ILC.
Okay.
Lovely, you know, little I didn't know that became situation. It was acting for the camera and it was combined with there was like another TV film component. I don't know if it was editing or filmmaking. And, you know, we got started and then we were pandemic. Sent home.
Yeah.
So we were then acting for the camera through Zoom, shooting it ourselves, having a director remotely directing us. So like for my I did a scene with Kirsten and we, that was the start of the semester, and we filmed that in like the guild lobby. But then by the end of the semester, I was doing a scene with Bree Cielo, who was sitting in her kitchen on the floor. I was sitting in my kitchen on the floor on Long Island. And then Kate Durgan was directing it. And I'm guessing she was home in North Carolina. So then she was directing us and was like, okay, what are you propping your camera up on? I would be like, jumbo package of paper towels, and she'd say like, can you get a pan to like put under it just to raise your eye level a little bit more.
So
that's what we were working with for my acting for the camera. And I think it was same in my senior year too, for kids that were taking it after that. It was still an at-home remote, but they knew how to gear it more towards a self-tape or an audition. I kind of got the fly by the seat of your pants, how are we going to make this work?
Acting
for the camera.
Which is always very interesting to hear how those types of classes develop post first time around when the pandemic first hit.
Yeah.
But it's great because you've come out of that since then. You've gotten to work on more full-fledged productions, people who can hold the camera and adjust it for you. And you recently did a short film, which I have a clip from. Can you tell me a little bit about what it is, how you got involved with it? And then we'll pull it up and watch a little clip.
Yeah, sure. So this was something that I saw on Backstage, just looking for gigs. I didn't have any, because you can't put background work on your resume, which you don't. I think I was maybe told that on like my first couple of gigs. You know, I wasn't like filling out my resume that I was starring on HBO shows, because I knew I wasn't. I knew you weren't seeing my face on these things, but I needed something to show that I could do this on camera for real, because all of my credits were theater.
Yeah.
And so there was a student film at Hofstra University, which is about 15 minutes from me. And I think I just sent a reel of like some monologues and things that I had filmed. I also had senior showcase stuff. So there was a scene from there that we had filmed. That was more of like the theater style than like the Urinetown style we did, but it was still better than nothing. I had something to show. And so I booked that and we filmed over Easter weekend. It was the director, Tori Licata. It was her senior project. And so she wrote the screenplay and directed it. And she had all her friends, you know, DPing and producing, and they all got to fill out the, it was like, it was a student run production. So they were filling out producer and like, you know, stage manager equivalent, what, how that all equates to film. And we filmed it half at her student housing off campus. Mm-hmm. And then on Easter weekend, we were filming on Staten Island at like her, her family lives near each other on Staten Island.
Yeah.
So on Easter morning, we were like bouncing around from like family's house to family's house to film. And it was that Easter, for some reason, it must've been an early Easter. We were freezing and we went so late into the night. And the final scene, it's not this one, but we were supposed to be like going to a house party. Mm-hmm. And I felt so bad because the girls were in such short
tiny
dresses and and we were shivering, like they're bringing blankets out of her aunt's house to like keep us all warm. It was rough, but it was such a cool experience to see how, because I came from the world of like student theater. I had so much fun with CSP at Wagner, and now seeing what student film looks like was such a
experience. It's fun to see how those two kind of like marry a little bit, or like share the same qualities and values when like putting together like a show together. So we have a clip from that. So we're going to go ahead and watch that real quick.
Can't believe we're doing this. And I know the only reason you were so quick to agree to it is
sorry.
I promise you'd never bring that up again. Anyway, can't you see I'm busy here? God, remind me never to ask Mr. Brennan a question after class ever again. I didn't know someone could talk so much.
There are a few people I hate on Earth more than that man. Look, I'm going to the Paltrow.
Oh my God. Why the hell does he have his name as David?
I don't know. Probably doesn't want people to know who he really is with all the weird stuff he's up to.
I'm like a glass of top shelf red, classic and utterly irresistible.
Okay, whatever. That doesn't matter. Give it to me. I need to swipe. Oh my God. It's a match. Well, all right. What do I say? How do old people even flirt?
My mother would be turning in her grave if she heard you say that 52 was old.
Her grave. She's not dead. That's my thing.
What was I supposed to say? Turning in her bed just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Okay.
It's a funny clip. I'm curious about the plot line of the rest of it, but
yeah, so
it looks like it was a fun group.
It was definitely a little bit of a stretch, grounded in realism, but not something I would, you know, really see happening.
And so then that was working on a very short film, but for the most part, you and I have the most experience working, doing background work on like TV and film. And those sets are very different. Obviously there's much more a like very rooted structure in place. There is so many more people on set. So I'm sure it must've been very interesting to see the difference between short film and working on these big productions.
Yeah, totally. Especially because when you are background, you are like lowest person on the totem pole in terms of cast value. I don't want to use the word value, but in terms of what the, you know, director cares most about, you know, background just kind of shows up and goes home at the end of the day. Yeah. But for this, I was saying things on camera and the camera was focused on what I, you know, was looking like and sounding like, which is not, you know, normal for the sets that we normally go to. So it was kind of cool to see how, when you're put in that, just the difference in positions, like how much more goes into obviously being like the front facing person as opposed to the blur that runs by in the background.
Yes, exactly. Well, and then also, like, when working as a background actor, it's so interesting to talk to other actors who will say, like, oh, working on that show was great, or working on that show was terrible, because someone will have the exact opposite experience. Because, like you were saying, each day is only a tiny fraction of the entire process. And I'm sure you can speak to that as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I definitely had some overlap. Mrs. Maisel was not my best experience.
Right.
But then I
had a good experience the first time. So it's right. Always interesting.
And yeah. I had another friend who it was her first, I think it was one of her first background gigs ever. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have the best experience either. So it totally, wherever the chips fall, where they are in the production, you don't know if this was a scramble for them to put together.
Yeah.
Or if they're at the beginning of their show, they're just learning how things are working out. So sometimes that can be difficult. There were a couple mm-hmm. shows, Girl on the Bus being one of them, that it was like one yeah. of their first few days. But then they're also at a point, conversely, where they don't feel like they are under pressure to get it done by the deadline, because the deadline right. is 6 months out. So everybody mm-hmm. is still kind of sitting back a little bit in their sense of time management, which can be 100%. A nice ease to have on set.
Yeah.
And with the and student some... film, she had oh, 2 days to get it done. So oh, it was, gosh. You know, we were kind of under pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, then there's some sets that work like clockwork, just like getting their stuff done. Like, I mean, I don't know how this was for you, but like with Law and Order, when I did it, it was just like, okay, we're getting it done. Granted, we went overtime that day, but like they knew exactly what they were doing and they got it done as quick as they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's so interesting. And also you, while we've both done background work, you've gotten to see a few more of the final products that you've gotten to work on. And with that being said, you've shared with me a few pictures and we're going to play like a little bit of Where's Waldo to try and find you. There's a few different shows that you've worked on. So while I am pulling this up, I'm curious, is there any particular show you want to look at first? You've labeled them so I know which pictures are which.
Yeah. We could do them in order that I actually filmed them. So the first okay. photo would be the Love Life photo. Okay. This was my first gig that I did. It was a 2-day shoot. The first day we were filming all day at Fiddlesticks, which is a bar in the Village. I think specifically Greenwich Village. But then the second day was also my first overnight shot, which I was not shown on camera for, which... So the first day we filmed until super late in the night. And then the second day was our overnight shot. So our call time was at 4, so we could get our 12 hours of turnaround time. And then we mm-hmm. probably weren't done until 1 or 2 in the morning, because they needed it to be as dark as possible, because the lead of this show was supposed to be just like wandering the village drunk and upset late at night.
Yeah.
So they needed it to be as dark as possible, which... by the time they set everything up, just happens to, you know, get going at 10:30.
Yeah.
So this was from day one of filming my first ever background gig.
And look at you right in the center there.
That is my backside fully in focus, in view. That day I didn't know. So also for background, something, if you've never done it before, you have to bring your own clothes
right.
for the most part. They have backup wardrobe if they don't like any of your options. So I was booked for this gig. They said, you will either be a junior Wall Street type or you will be dressed like a frat bro. So I had more things that leaned frat bro. So I brought those. And then I think I threw in like a pair of nice dress pants and like a black polo. And they liked my frat bro options more. And everybody before me was also having their wardrobe options being chosen for the frat type.
Right.
And I said, am I going to have to change into this Wall Street option later? And they said, no, you're just a frat guy for the day. And so I said, okay, I was a little confused. And then Holding was in a church nearby. And as we're lining up, ready to go, they have to take your picture so that production can approve your outfit. And they send over the pictures and production responds to them saying, where are my junior Wall Street guys? So 5 of us had to stay back and change into clothes that they had provided for us. These were not my, you know, dress shirt and pants.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be a frat guy, but that was part of the scene, I would show a full clip, but that is frankly not allowed. I tried screen recording, and HBO Max and Netflix give you a black screen when you do that. So, but that was exciting to see my first show, to know that I was on it. Ross, another friend of the podcast, actually texted me and said, "Is this you in the background of this bar?" And I said,
and like,
"Good
hey,
eye.
That is
yes,
me.
It
good
is.
Eye.
Yeah."
That's cool to also have a friend who like saw and like saw you and were like, "Wait a second, hold on a sec."
Yeah.
But no, that's so funny with the wardrobe, because I had like a similar thing where I was doing background on Everything's Trash, which is on Hulu. And the day that I was there, it was like I was supposed to be one of the bar like patrons, and it was like a hip trendy bar, so just like wear all of your fun stuff. And I like brought stuff, and then immediately, like not too long after I got my wardrobe approved, like an AD comes over and was like, "One of our bartenders is gone, you're gonna be a bartender." And I said, "Okay." So like essentially all of my outfits were like set aside, and of course we had brought like 3 outfit options that day, so like after lugging all of this huge duffel bag of clothes, didn't use any of them. But it was still fine. It was like, here, wear this jean jacket, look like a cool hip bartender. So I was like, okay, cool, this is fine. But it's always very funny. And then sometimes they'll be like, "Hey, we actually need you to be a nurse, so can you put on these scrubs?" And I was like, sure, cool. Cool. So we have Love Life. What is the next one you want to take a look at?
The second one I sent 2 photos for, because they were 2 separate episodes, but we actually filmed them on the same day, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So this was for the Netflix show Uncoupled.
I'll do the daytime one first.
Yeah. So we filmed this on one of the piers along the West Side Highway.
Such a flattering picture of Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, sorry, Neil. My screen grab was more concerned about the pink blob running in the background than what Neil Patrick Harris was looking like. If he ever sees this, I'm sorry. But
it's fine.
This was very early in the morning. It was very cold out, and we were told to not look like we were cold. We were told to dress like, I think it, like if we were filming on a super cold fall morning, like we were supposed to dress like it was summer, something like that, like a season shifted. So that's why the poor actor standing next to Neil Patrick Harris is just in a long sleeve shirt, probably freezing his butt off. But I was just a blur running in the background. And this is the situation where the average viewer is not going to pay attention to the pink hoodie running off camera. Yeah, but I know that pink hoodie is me.
Yeah.
And I could tell my grandma that is me.
Yes, and you were paid to do it.
I was.
And I think this next one will be, perfect.
So that is me. Again, another blur. I'm taking up a third of the screen.
Yeah.
But it is another blur.
But it's a total blur.
To the average viewer, you don't know it was me. And this was another wardrobe debacle where they said dress like a club goer. And so I had black jeans, black boots, and a black shirt. Just plain black, either t-shirt or polo shirt. Which I was like, going to, late night out in the city, totally what you would wear. And I guess a lot of other people didn't get the memo. There was a vibe that they were trying to fit that not many people subscribed to when they were packing their duffel bags for the day. So luckily you can't tell on camera, but this is a fully mesh shirt.
It looks like you're wearing like some like striped t-shirt or something with like a dark collar and like a dark
meshed,
stripe around
it's
there.
Meshed
nope, that's
barbed
a mesh
wire,
shirt.
Barbed wire pattern on it.
That's wild.
I'm grateful that it doesn't translate on camera because I thought I looked ridiculous. But this was interesting because I was catching a lot of what production had to say to each other that day, which was, I guess, just where I was placed.
Yeah.
And the what they're going for in this scene is that Neil Patrick Harris is trying to enter the dating scene again, and he's kind of aged out of what like the trends are.
Right.
So they wanted this to be a young and trendy bar that Neil Patrick Harris doesn't fit the scope of.
Thus the mesh t-shirt.
Yes. So there were other people that were dressed in not as club going clothes. I remember there was one guy in like just like ripped jeans and like one of those Old Navy like American flag t-shirts. And I specifically remember I felt so bad for this guy. The director or DP saying to one of the ADs, I can't have him in the shot. Put him in the back. He's ruining it. And I felt so bad because this guy didn't hear it, but it just goes to show, like, you are a background person. You are there to, you know, help the final product of this shot. And if you're not serving that, they have no issue kind of telling you to, or telling somebody else to just kind of hide you in the back and bury you, as they like to say.
Exactly. It's all for the final product of the picture itself. And when you're a background, you are set. You are a part of the set, which is which sounds like really rude, but also there's a whole art to it as well. Like the you'd be so shocked to know how often rearranging people in a studio audience on Marvelous Miss Maisel, for example, how long that takes. And it's just based on like what color someone's wearing, or if like someone's hat is too tall, or things like that. It's really an art to figure out that set of people, and it's just simply not personal. And then I have this final one.
Yeah, this is I didn't point me out because I thought it would be funny to play an actual game of Where's Waldo. This was one of the most recent things I worked on. It was for this last season of American Horror Story. I was told I was just going to play a teenager. And so
I'm like trying to find you.
At that very crowded booth, those are the principals of the episode. So you can see Billy Lord is in the blue with the glasses up against the window. Charlie Carver is in the light blue shirt. And then the back of the person's head in the green on the end, that's Sandra Bernhard. Those were the three people I recognized from the show that day. And then there's some waitresses. There's some other diner guests. This was like late 70s, early 80s. We filmed it at the Van Damme Street Diner in Long Island City.
I feel like you're either near here at the end with your back towards us, or you're somewhere in this bright area that you can only see shadows of people.
So I'm actually right in between them in the red shirt with the jeans at the end of the bar.
Oh, you're literally right here.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That was just luck of the draw. They said, you two sit here. And I happened to be standing in front of this guy in the crowd when they pulled us out. And then I, unfortunately for him, blocked him for this whole scene. And there's a waitress behind the counter that, you know, she was acting like she was taking our order and was going to bring us a cup of coffee. But it's the busy work to make it look like a diner early in the morning, when this was really a bunch of randos in an actual diner at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning and 2022 instead of 1979 or whenever the show was
exactly set. crazy to see those, and thank you for sending those over to me because that was really fun to take a look at. And we're pretty much at the end of the episode, but I want to make sure we cover your story about how you became eligible for SAG-AFTRA, and at this point you're a little bit further than eligible for SAG-AFTRA. So I'm curious to hear quickly how you got your three vouchers making you eligible for SAG.
So yeah, three vouchers. You don't, at least in my experience, I didn't really know how they were going to come to me. I knew that I needed these three elusive pieces of paper that, you know, said SAG on them, and instead of saying non-union. And I actually have four now. So three makes you eligible, but background, because you are so just kind of come and go into productions, you kind of slip under the radar a little bit. So you don't become what is a must join, where I have friends who were picking up their vouchers by getting a line or two on Law & Order or City on the Hill, where SAG was like, we're on to you because we know you're getting much bigger checks from us than the $187 for 8 hours of work that background gets. You've got to pay your dues if you want to work in this town again. So for me, I'm slipping under the radar, you know, catching my extra $25 if I can get a voucher. But my first one was on that show, Three Women, where they needed somebody local to bring a car. And I happened to fit the bill. They say to get your voucher that the non-union actor has to fill a requirement when they've kind of exhausted all of their SAG options.
Yes.
And I've kind of
noticed.
Or if
they don't have enough SAG actors on set that day.
Yes. So it's happened to me where it's been a lot of rush calls or a last minute circumstance, or people in the city don't have a car that they want to drive out to Levittown on Long Island to film for the day.
Right.
So that's how I got my first one. My second one was on FBI Most Wanted, and that was a total fluke. I agreed to do that job, and then after I accepted it was when they told me you have to get on a bus and go to Rye, New York to film for the day, and we got stuck in traffic, and it was awful. And I thought the crew was just being kind of rude towards background that day, and I hadn't experienced that kind of rudeness from crew yet. Everybody was just either didn't act like you were anybody, or they were, you know, super kind and understanding. And when I show up to holding that day, this was through Central Casting, so I got a text, and it was personally addressed to me, and it said, "Zachary, there is a chance you will get a voucher today. Do not say anything to anyone. Thank you. Goodbye." And so I'm just sitting with this information. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do with this? And I had already filled out a paper voucher from production. So I walk up to one of the people that signs you in, and I was like, I just got this text. What do I do? And he's like, we're not giving vouchers to anybody today. I don't know why you got that text. And I was like, okay, I will. Sit down. I will sit down. And this is something else I didn't realize, is that SAG people get paid for their transportation time if it is provided by the show. So everybody on that bus was getting paid from the moment they set foot onto the bus, and then coming home when we were really stuck in rush hour traffic, they got paid from leaving the set all the way until it got to its final destination in Manhattan, where non-union people, you get signed out on set and that's kind of the end. Well, I go about my day, you know, I'm sitting on this bus waiting to get home. I'm like, everybody's getting paid and I'm not, this is miserable. I get my pay stub in the mail and it was for union rates. And so my hourly rate went up. I didn't realize that they were an hour and a half to give us lunch that day. So I got paid three penalties because they were three half hours late. And I got paid for all that travel time. So that was a blessing in disguise.
And you were like, so where's the voucher? Because I don't actually have it. If you could show that to me, that'd be great.
Yeah. So that getting that pay stub was the confirmation that like you were booked as a SAG gig, because when I want to join, you actually have to turn over not your checks, but your physical pay stubs to SAG to show that you want to join. And then my third one was for American Horror Story. When I booked it, they told me, they're like, this is last minute. SAG is normally check-ins number like 1 through 25. I think I was number 24 or something crazy. So they just needed to get people in as soon as possible. And I was one of the first to say yes. And then that just happened the same thing. I booked the original Law & Order. And it was another rush call where they were like, can you get over here as soon as possible? And I said, yes. And so I was very fortunate. Yeah, it kind of, they all kind of came within a very short period of time. But I had been doing background for probably like 9 or 10 months before my three vouchers came within like 4 months.
Crazy. So craziness. It's
right place at right time. And I am very fortunate to have been in three right places at three right times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, we've come to the end of our episode. This hour went by so quickly. It was crazy. Where can people find you on social media?
My Instagram is probably the most active, even though I don't think I've posted in maybe 9 months. You can find me at @ZachSloan_. And then be sure to check out at the Backstory Music. I am definitely more active on there. And probably after this, I'm going to post today's new music releases for Friday. So be sure to check those out.
Amazing. Amazing. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter for as long as it will exist at @Laura_Marjoram and my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show on Instagram at Overtures Show, as well as YouTube, which is probably where you are watching this if you're watching it physically. And then we're also on Spotify and Apple Music. That's where you can listen to all the podcast versions. I am fully up to date now, which is crazy. So we'll be going from 2 episodes a week down to 1 because I've pretty much caught up, which is crazy. If you rate and write a little thing recommending the show on Spotify and Apple Music, I'll try and read them here on live so that we can get to share some of you guys, and that'll be really exciting. My next dream is completely to be determined in terms of timing, because I'll be heading out to Millbrook Playhouse, hoping to get up to some Overtures fun while I'm there, but I still have to figure out the details of that. So stay tuned to the Instagram, because that's where the most up-to-date posts will be. So yeah, Zach, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
I would say if you feel like the door is kind of closed right now, or maybe open a little bit of a crack, you can either, there's a way to get through that door, or there's always a window next to that door to get your way through, or build your own window and climb out of it. Background work has been that way for me. And my Instagram account has kind of just been a fun little side project adventure. So it's out there and it's all yours.
Absolutely. I love that so much. And with that wonderful wisdom from Zach, thank you so much. And we will see you all later and hope you have a great day. So bye, everyone.